Hello everyone, and welcome to Genocide News Now from the Lemkin Institute. I'm your host, Natasha Lau. The Lemkin Institute for Genocide Prevention is an all-volunteer organization that relies on donations from individuals like you to cover operating costs. If you appreciate the clear-eyed, even-handed, and frank assessments of situations you care about, please consider making a one-time contribution or monthly gift on our website. Subscribe to this podcast on Patreon. Now, let's dive into the news. Our first story takes us to France, where the country's highest court issued a revolutionary decision on the immunities of state officials in relation to genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes. On the 25th of July, 2025, the court ruled that officials were unable to benefit from functional immunity in cases concerning international crimes. Adib Mayale, the former governor of the Syrian Central Bank, was indicted on charges of complicity in crimes against humanity and war crimes in 2022. These charges included participating in groups which prepared such crimes and laundering the proceeds afterwards. He sought to have his indictment annulled, objecting to the ruling based on the functional immunity he enjoyed as a high-ranking official. Functional immunity typically provides state officials immunity from the criminal jurisdiction of another state for acts that they commit in an official capacity. This immunity follows officials for their whole lives, so they cannot be prosecuted for criminal acts that they performed in the exercise of state authority. International law, however, is evolving towards excluding international crimes from the application of this immunity. According to the draft articles on the immunity of state officials from foreign criminal jurisdiction, published by the International Law Commission, there are certain crimes in respect of which such immunity cannot apply, including genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes. France's highest court confirmed this interpretation when considering Mayale's case. The decision addresses a long-standing gap in the court's jurisprudence, marking the first time that the Court of Cassation has recognized an exception to the application of functional immunity. It notably stated that it hoped to define a new balance between immunities and the fight against impunity, signaling a step forward in the global fight for accountability of genocidaires and officials committing grave violations of human rights. This is especially important in Syria, where the Assad regime wreaked terror on the civilian population for over 50 years. Bashar al-Assad, who ruled for 24 years before being overthrown in December 2024 and fleeing to Russia, was also known as the Butcher. His fall marked the end of decades of brutality, including enforced disappearances, arbitrary arrests and detention, torture, mass surveillance, rape, and extrajudicial killings. Over 300,000 civilians were killed between 2011 and 2021 by the Assad regime, including over 27,000 children. Victims, survivors, and those who have been displaced welcomed Assad's fall. The end of the regime meant that they could share their experiences without fear of reprisal by the state. Those who survived the chemical attack in Ghouta in 2013 have recounted their experiences, recalling the horrors, deaths, and lasting scars left by such atrocities. The Syrian government used sarin gas, a lethal nerve agent, to carry out chemical attacks that killed and disabled hundreds of civilians in Ghouta. The impossibility of physical access to eastern and western Ghouta meant that investigations had to be carried out through available video and photo footage, as well as interviews with witnesses and doctors who responded to the attacks. Those living in exile feared reprisal against family members who remained in Syria. Stories like this are not uncommon across Syria. They are but one of the ways the regime waged terror against its population, enjoying impunity for decades. Allowing cases of atrocity crimes to be brought forth before national courts expands accountability efforts, as signaled by the French court. Genocidal patterns and evidence brought forth in judicial processes acknowledge the pain that victims have suffered and put genocidaires under the scrutiny of the entire community. Permitting courts to examine genocide and other international crimes also sheds light on the tactics used by both direct perpetrators and those who are complicit. Recognizing genocidal patterns in an official record empowers prevention efforts by drawing parallels between what the international community has seen in the past and ongoing genocidal processes. With attacks on ethnic and religious minorities in Syria continuing even after the fall of the Assad regime, understanding how to prevent further atrocities is vital to ensuring peace and justice. the bombing of an Orthodox church in Damascus in June, as well as attacks on the Jews in Suwaida, point to a disturbing spiral of violence, even under a new government. Addressing previous atrocities is key in protecting communities from further attacks and signaling that there is no impunity for those who commit grave violations of human rights. The Lemkin Institute welcomes the Court of Cassation's recognition that functional immunities cannot apply in cases of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes. This decision is a step forward for accountability efforts around the world. We hope that the ongoing efforts to bring all those involved in the atrocities perpetrated by the Assad regime to justice will continue so as to bring peace to victims and their families. We now turn to the South Caucasus, where a peace draft between Azerbaijan and Armenia has been signed in Washington on the 8th of August. Despite its aim to, quote, a bright future not bound by the conflict of the past, unquote, the present text fails to properly address vital issues to Armenia's integrity, sovereignty, and security, nor does it confront Azerbaijan's aggressive politics towards Armenia and Armenians. Among the multiple unsolved issues are the Armenian prisoners still held in Baku. Since the resumption of hostilities in 2020, and during Azerbaijan's military offensive of 2023, Armenian civilians have been captured and detained by Azerbaijani soldiers without proper observation to due diligence. In a 2024 report, Freedom House described the experience of multiple Artsakh civilians who had to face Azerbaijan soldiers. Several cases reported that civilians were extracted from their communities and detained for up to 10 days. During detention, men were often beaten and the soldiers engaged in psychological violence. The same report describes cases of enforced disappearance among civilians in Nagorno-Karabakh, illegal under international humanitarian law. On top of these kidnappings, Nagorno-Karabakh leadership was also detained and is currently undergoing trials in a military court. Currently, Azerbaijan has detained around 20 Armenians, 16 of which are on trial as having been part of Karabakh's governance entourage. Ruben Vardanyan, the former minister of Nagorno-Karabakh, made headlines as he went on multiple hunger strikes to protest the political nature of his detainment and trial in Baku. His lawyer has repeatedly reiterated Azerbaijan's unlawful conduct. In February, the Azerbaijani authorities disregarded Vardanyan's health concerns and pursued his court hearings undisturbed. In May, he was denied access to a Bible while in prison. Finally, Azerbaijan's authorities have committed a series of administrative violations. They failed to notify the accused of his charges, and they did not offer translations of the accusations. Moreover, Vardanyan has not been given enough time to familiarize himself with the lengthy case. On top of that, the hearings have been conducted behind closed doors and the international press has been denied access to the courtroom. All in all, these actions show Azerbaijan's disregard to due process and put in serious risks those who are still detained in Baku. Furthermore, the situation is aggravated by Azerbaijan's decision in March to cease the work of the International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC, in the country. The ICRC's work was hindered and undermined by Aliyev's government on multiple occasions, as the organization was accused of pushing an anti-Turkish agenda and showing indulgence towards Armenian provocations. The decision spread concerns as the ICRC was the only international organization allowed to maintain contact and visit Armenian prisoners of war. Its alienation is further proof of Azerbaijan's disinterest in respecting international norms and aim at cutting information related to the prisoners. All in all, despite welcoming the recent steps towards diplomatic normalization between Armenia and Azerbaijan, the Lemkin Institute highlights the importance of respecting international humanitarian law and the rights of prisoners, especially in such a fragile and volatile context. Moreover, it urges the Armenian executive and the international society not to forget about the fates of the Armenians still in detention, as their rights are stripped and violated by Azerbaijan. For more, read our official statement released on the Institute's website at lemkininstitute.com for an in-depth description of the fallacies and dangers of the current peace draft. Our next story takes us to Afghanistan,
where the forced deportation of millions of refugees is pushing the nation to the brink. Since 2023, more than 2.1 million Afghan refugees from Iran and Pakistan have been sent back to a home that's unfamiliar and lacks the resources to support them. For decades, neighboring Iran and Pakistan have been a top destination for refugees fleeing instability. Many arrived in 1979, seeking safety following the Soviet invasion. A further 1.2 million Afghans fled to Iran following the Taliban's takeover, while 600,000 fled to Pakistan. But now, these nations are rushing to expel all undocumented Afghan refugees with no regard for their security and well-being. The reasons for the expulsions are complicated. These refugees have never been truly accepted in their host countries. Most lack proper documentation, even children born and raised there. They are not considered refugees, but rather undocumented migrants who lack even the most basic of legal protections. In Iran, their children were banned from going to school, keeping them trapped in the lowest rungs of society. In Pakistan, refugees have faced widespread harassment and arbitrary detention. As outsiders, Afghan refugees make for easy scapegoats to distract from other issues. Iran and Pakistan label the refugees as illegal immigrants and blame them for crime to justify forcing them out of the country. Relations between both nations and Afghanistan have also deteriorated, as they blame the Taliban for supporting terrorist attacks within their borders. Now, tens of thousands of refugees arrive daily, finding numerous challenges. Rent prices are swelling in Kabul, up from around $145 last year to over $300 now, an enormous ask in a country where the average monthly income averages less than $100. Work opportunities are highly limited. A majority of the returnees are women and children who face unique difficulties. The return is especially difficult for women who face a sudden loss of their most basic rights. Girls are forced to drop out of school and are essentially banned from public life. Relief agencies are struggling to meet the demand. Since the Taliban's takeover in 2021, international aid to Afghanistan has nearly ceased. Relief Web states that just 29% of the required $478 million in aid funding has been delivered. The closure of US aid has further limited availability. With such few resources, aid agencies are stretched to the brink and providing just a fraction of the help that's needed. The Lemkin Institute calls on the UN and other international actors to provide essential resources to returnees in order to ensure their basic dignity. Once again, civilians suffer the most when geopolitics collide. Afghanistan has suffered countless tragedies in the past decades, and this development is yet another. As for our last piece of news this episode, we move to the Sahel region of Africa, which continues to suffer from the effects of increased political instability, amplified geopolitical tensions, and the use of hard counter-terrorism measures to deter and destroy the threat from Salafi jihadi groups. The Sahel has seen the steepest increases in terrorism deaths globally, with nearly 20,000 deaths since 2019 and 3,885 deaths in 2024. In particular, the decision of Central Sahel countries Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger to create the Alliance of Sahel States and formal withdrawal from the economic community of West African states has compounded regional fragmentation and tensions. These countries grapple with an entrenched jihadist insurgency that continues to expand through the activities of the Al-Qaeda-affiliated Jamaat Nusra al-Islam wal-Muslimin, JNIM, and the Islamic State Sahel Province, ISSP. These groups systematically use seizures, threats, kidnappings, improvised explosive devices and landmines as deliberate tactics of war as they seek to control supply routes and increase areas of influence. In besieged areas, armed Islamist groups are blocking humanitarian aid to civilians and causing starvation, imposing forced taxation, and strategically destroying and looting civilian objects, including places of worship, health centers, food reserves, and water services, among other violations. foreign nationals are getting caught in the fray. On the 10th of July 2025, armed groups enacted several coordinated attacks on military installations in central and southern Mali towns, including Kayes. Regarding the attack on Kayes, the Indian Foreign Ministry stated that three Indian nationals working at a cement factory were forcibly taken as hostages and are urging their, quote, safe and expeditious, end quote, release. As community development expert Jean-Marie Connet points out, quote, the assailants are determined to bite where it hurts, and foreigners will remain potential targets, end quote. Amid these shifts, the military regimes have taken several measures to repress civic and political space and reduce international scrutiny into their country's human rights situations. Particularly in Burkina Faso and Mali, state forces have reacted to jihadist groups' escalating activity with retaliatory violence against civilians in order to deter civilians from providing support to armed groups. In May, Mali's military government outlawed and criminalized political parties, as well as any organizations they labeled as, quote, political, end quote, triggering mass protests and outrage. At the same time, at least 20 Fulani civilians were executed and buried in mass graves after being arrested by FAMA, Malian Armed Forces, soldiers in the central town of Diafarabe. The FAMA, assisted by the Africa Corps, Russian paramilitaries, reportedly launched airstrikes targeting JNIM militants in Diafarabe, resulting in civilian casualties. In Burkina Faso, a weeks-long campaign led by special forces during March resulted in at least 130 civilians killed and significant displacement of Fulani around the town of Solenzo. The African Union Special Envoy on the Prevention of Genocide and Other Mass Atrocities, Adama Dieng, described the massacre in Solenzo as a, quote, flagrant violation of human rights, end quote. Following the massacre, JNIM carried out retaliatory attacks against villagers the group viewed to be helping the military, killing at least 100 civilians. In August, the UN Security Council will hold a briefing on West Africa and the Sahel, which is a promising development and a platform where a plan to find an end to this conflict may come to fruition. The Lemkin Institute welcomes these efforts and supports the cessation of wanton violence and the formulation of a long-lasting peace agreement. The challenge for the countries of the Sahel will be to deal with these threats in a way that prevents further destabilization and protects vulnerable populations from the violence that continues to spread across their territories. Until a peaceful solution is formulated, civilians will continue to bear the brunt of the havoc that this conflict continues to wreak. That's all we have for this episode of Genocide News Now, but be sure to tune into future episodes released monthly. To follow the Lemkin Institute's work on conflicts with more rapid developments, such as Israel's war on the Palestinians and Azerbaijan's aggression towards Armenia, be sure to subscribe to us on social media. You can find us at Lemkin Institute, all one word, on Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, Facebook, and for more on our work in the field of genocide prevention, visit our website at www.lemkininstitute.com. Thank you for listening and have a great day. This podcast was made with contributions from Maya Chakina, Andrea, Swarabat, Natalie Stein, and Natasha Love.